Welcome back, motherfuckers!
Okay. Hi.
Hi.
How's it going?
That's going good. Hey, you were listening to the Waitlist Space, by the way.
With Lindsay.
And me, Robert.
Welcome.
Hey, we're going to talk about being called today. But before we talk about being called, let's check in with each other.
Okay. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good.
Wow. Thanks. Here's thanks for that update, Rob. Any prayer requests?
Any prayer requests? My cousin's got a headache. No, I'm kidding. Jeez, that was good. I have read and watched more about Jesus-y and Bible stuff in the last, well, whenever we started, however long it's been, than I have in years.
How do you feel about that?
It's a strange feeling, honestly. I have spent a lot of the last few years in hiding, spiritual hiding. And, I mean, at first it was like a way to protect myself. Don't get hurt. Run away from the flaming arrows. Get away from being hurt. Then it was like it felt good to kind of be in a quiet space for a while. Like not, okay, I'm not obsessed over this. I'm not hurting over this. A lot of the feelings have passed. And I want to...
rest.
Rest. Resting was nice. Sitting down and being able to not fret over all of this stuff was nice. And then doing research for episodes, you know, getting back into this and reading about the state of affairs really has opened my eyes in a lot of ways about things. You know, I've stumbled on to some new resources. I've seen examples of Christians talking about things that I feel are good and wonderful, and examples of what I wish I had heard when we were in the midst of it.
Right.
But reading about a guy named Tim and the New Evangelicals and his website and such has been nice. Hearing people that believe in Jesus, that affirm gay relationships, that aren't a part of a right-wing cult, mm-hmm. that want full rights for people groups and want women to be able to vote and lead and, you know, all of these things that over the last few years I have just struggled with the expressions of Christianity that I've been in. It sounds kind of silly saying it now. It's weird to hear non-fundamentalist Christian views talk. I'm like, these guys can't be real. This isn't real. Now, I'm in no way close to saying, oh yeah, that's the camp I want to be in, or,
sure.
you know, align myself. I am nowhere near that. But it has been refreshing to hear Jesus in ways that did not make me sad, you know, that did not hurt me. So, I've enjoyed thinking about some of these things I haven't thought about in a long time, you know. And, the Bible in general, I just have not... you know, I have not looked at the Bible in years and years and years. And kind of reapproaching some of this has made me go back to some. And I heard one conversation between two folks that land in the progressive Christian side talk about their faith in a way that was not based on fundamental Orthodox Christianity. And it was very progressive. And I was like, it was poetic. It was beautiful. It was all kinds of stuff. And so... I don't know, it gave me kind of hope, even though my hope's not that, like, my hope isn't necessarily associated with that as a religion. It's still hopeful that there are people that can claim Christianity that aren't just also terrible. Because in my mind, unfortunately, those two things have become synonymous. And I hate that that's true, but that feels kind of true. So, that's kind of a... long-winded answer. There's way more to talk about in terms of how I feel and what I've expressed or experienced as part of this, like, re-engagement with this podcast and such. But that answers your question. I kind of want to hear about you.
From our very first date, and I mean our lunch date, mm-hmm. I've enjoyed deep conversations with you, and I have missed these deep conversations in your sabbatical from them. Mm-hmm. So it is, I think for me, it makes me feel closer to you. I've also really enjoyed the conversations that I'm having with people who have reached out to me. Mm. So I guess I focus more on like the relationship aspect, the results of relationships.
There's been some amazing feedback.
Yeah, and I really like hearing other people's stories and like kind of what they're going through. And you know me, that's my life. I love stories. I love hearing other people's perspectives. And for me, it's been encouraging to hear other people who have kind of had similar struggles and are working through it. It just, because it's very isolating, you know, when you leave a mega church. Mm. And so it's made my world seem not as small. It's also been really fun just to spend time talking to you again about deep things.
I didn't realize I was so withholding myself in that way. You feel like I was?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. I'm sorry for that.
I mean, because we used to sit at the table and have conversations every other night with ourselves, other people, whatever. Yeah. We haven't had those, which is okay. I mean, I still have thoughts, even though you and I aren't engaging in the conversation. I still have a progression of thoughts mm-hmm. and, you know, I think about things. But it's been really nice to share it with you.
I think I had a lot of fear regarding what to say and think and talk about and how to, like, we knew from our very first lunch date, we had a formula to our conversations, if you will. You know, we did talk about
me
God.
Me asking a million questions.
Well, no, I was going to say just like the body and work of God and Jesus in the Bible. And we also, both you and I, have wide views, deep views of all kinds of other topics. And we've talked about all kinds of stuff.
I think that I probably have wider views than you have traditionally had, because I don't believe that faith is contained within just the topic of Jesus. Mm-hmm, I believe mm-hmm. there's so much more. Not to discredit that, but I think that there is a thread through all things.
Right.
Of that, you know.
Yeah.
Well, you know my perspective, the interconnectedness of things.
Yeah, and I think I started out that way earlier in my youthful days and got that, you know, taught out of me, brainwashed out of me.
Groomed.
And groomed out of me, you know, whatever word we want to use. And so I'm getting that back to some degree.
Isn't that great?
It is great. That fear has passed, so I'm not afraid of that anymore, you know.
That's good. So what are we talking about today?
We still have a couple of episode topics coming out. We're trying to line up a couple of guests to hear some more voices and such. But in the meantime, the word calling came to mind because I saw something online. And I just remember how that word meant something. It meant a lot of things.
Well, first, wait.
Okay. Yep.
You're getting too far ahead. First, tell me what you think the word calling means, like its definition. Not all of its implications, just what is its definition?
Yeah. it's so mucky and mired. Let me see if I can.
And is there another word phrase that you use interchangeably with calling?
Yes.
Okay, what is that?
And we're going to talk about all those things.
Okay.
I'm trying to give you the generic answer that I would have given you 5 years ago.
No. Yeah. Tell me the answer today.
Oh, well, I can't. There's no way I can do that. That definition has been blown up.
Okay, well, what was it? I got you.
Yeah.
Past definition. What did calling mean?
Calling is hearing from God what you should be doing and then doing it.
That's a really good answer. I like that.
That's my generic answer, which I don't believe anymore.
Is there another word? Because I use the word purpose interchangeably with calling. Is that for you as well?
Yes, but there's baggage with that.
Well, I'll tell you why, if I may.
I'm going to drop one little bag right at your feet before you go on. A purpose-driven life.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
You were going to say
Rick
that?
By Rick Warren.
That's what I was going to get at.
Okay, so here's the thing, though. I have things to say about this.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm going first.
Okay.
The concept of a purpose-driven life, it starts out saying...
Can I interrupt you? I already want to interrupt
no,
you.
No, please don't. Let me finish one whole sentence.
Please, I just want to.
No! Stop. I'm going to kick you. The concept of purpose-driven life, it starts out by saying, is to be not selfish. Okay? And that's... I think that's a great purpose. That's a great purpose. That's a great start to finding purpose, is not to be selfish. However, if you never go deeper than that, that working for others, other-centered, doing things for others, it is an opening for abuse, and it is indicative of a boundaryless life. And by boundaryless life, I mean not having healthy boundaries mm-hmm. between what you're doing and what people are asking of you. And I do like the concept of being selfless, because I think there's something beautiful about that. But you can't be selfless all the time. And I think what happens is people go from having a driving force in their life, a purpose-driven life, to a purpose-filled life, meaning their life is now filled with things that they think are purposeful from God, that they're doing for others, and they're not caring for themselves in the process.
I'm so confused.
Oh my gosh, really?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me.
No, I'm not confused. I understand what you're saying. Mm-hmm. But there are so many layers of nuance to this conversation, and I found myself, while listening, mind you, while listening.
You're right. You were thinking about what you were going to say. Instead of listening.
While I was listening.
Instead of listening.
There were so many things that had to be, that fit together in certain ways with the pre-existing understanding. If you understand it and I understand it, then they fit together.
Presuppositions.
Yeah, sounds like a big word. That's fancy. There are so many presuppositions. Mm-hmm. In a lot of what you said.
Such as?
I'll give you one.
Okay.
There are times in life when one must be selfish.
That's literally what I just said.
But that doesn't sound like what you said. That's why it's confusing.
Okay, what did you hear me say?
That it's good to be selfless, and it's good to live for others, but you should have boundaries, healthy boundaries, in which case you do choose yourself.
Okay, let me say it again to be clear.
Okay.
There are times when being selfless is a beautiful thing, but you cannot be that way all the time.
Right.
So boundaries is determining when it's appropriate to be selfless and when it's appropriate to instill a boundary.
And I will go so far as to say that there are times in life when a person, for whatever reasons, and we can go into that if you want to, needs to be mostly selfish because of healing or other things, right? So, and then in that state, are they now not purpose driven?
What?
See? Confusing.
No, you're confusing things.
Okay, so here's my thesis for the conversation regarding a calling. And if you want to say a calling is a purpose-driven life, I think that needs to be thrown out. Rick Warren's book on a purpose-driven life was a Bible study that he wrote for his congregation.
I know that, yes,
yeah.
Correct.
It was a response to something he felt he needed, ironically, called to say to the group of people he was shepherding.
Sure, I understand.
And
that
a bunch
too.
Of people attached themselves to it and bought onto it.
Right.
Because a purpose-driven life teaches that one must kind of empty yourself, follow God's will, know God's will, and do that thing. Is an atheist without purpose? Is a drug addict who cannot expend anything for anyone else right now for years in order to heal need to choose themselves? Are they purposeless? And I don't think that's what you're saying, but
what
that's why.
What do you think I was saying?
I think.
What did you hear me say?
I heard you say that it's good to not be selfish, but it's also good to know when you need to choose yourself.
Okay.
With healthy boundaries.
Okay. What I said is the beginning of a purpose-driven life is it starts with the concept of not being selfish. Mm-hmm. That's the beginning. And I said it's a great beginning, but if that's as far as you go, it falls short. Because it opens up the gates for other people to abuse you if you're always giving.
Right.
It opens up the gates for you to become neglectful to yourself, mm-hmm. and for you to overextend yourself and get into the burnout zone.
Yeah, totally agree.
Okay, so I'm not sure why you're disagreeing with me so much if you're agreeing with what I said.
No, I agree with you, and I don't think I'm disagreeing with you. I would just not use that phrase, purpose-driven stuff. Like, there is so much baggage with that to me.
Okay, so what I hear you saying is that you personally have baggage with that study.
Of course, 100%.
Okay.
100%.
I'm not saying everyone should follow it to the T. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is it starts out with a good idea, but it falls short. It's not fleshed out well. If all you do is take that idea and live by it, you're setting yourself up for disaster.
Yeah. So there's a part of me that agrees with what you are saying right now.
Okay.
I could not disagree with the majority of that book in its entirety, more so now than ever before. And so for me, the purpose has got, the word purpose has got baggage to me. The word calling is baggage. Now, obviously, I think we can talk about these things and I'm not upset about them, but I won't ever say like, oh, what Rick Warren said in A Purpose-Driven Life is something that we should all kind of like run to. In fact, I would actually go the other way. I want the pendulum to swing the other way.
So you think people should fundamentally be selfish?
Yes.
Okay. This is funny.
Yes.
This is funny. Please explain your philosophy on selfishness.
Okay. This might be a stretch too. So okay. This might be hella confusing.
Let's hear it. We can always record something else tomorrow. Just
no,
let
this
you know.
Good.
We don't have
like
to publish
it.
This.
No, we're going to publish this. Warts and okay. all. So
you're describing your philosophy on selfishness.
I want to choose different words other than the Rick Warren thing. Right. That threw me for a curveball.
Right. You're describing your philosophy of selfishness.
No, but I got to frame it.
Okay.
Okay. So, because that's not what it is. It's not about me being selfish. It's about me loving myself in a way that I can understand, in a way that honors me. Hmm. And so because I have self-love, I can then love others.
Okay.
And I can only love others if I have some level of self-love. And self-love does not look like pouring out my existence for the betterment of others. Mm-hmm. But this, and here's the thing, I'm not talking politics, I'm not talking all that, because I do believe in a more progressive view as it relates to politics, but I'm talking about myself, my psyche, my ego, my id, me understanding the soul of me. The purpose-driven life, or that framework, only works, in my view, when you believe you're born broken in the world.
Hmm.
So
explain
I want to go.
Wait, explain that. How does that work? How does it only work if you believe you're born broken?
The purpose-driven life, the generic, God's going to call you to fulfill a thing and you got to do it. Everybody's got to fill a calling and everybody's got to mesh together. And because we're all broken, the only way that we can work together is by leveraging everybody else's output in unison together. Hmm. Okay? And the whole university is the unity in diversity. Like, we're all different and we come together and we are one universal because we have differences. And so there's a layer of that that is true and I like. But it all has a presupposition based on
look at you using new words.
I know,
words.
I learned
Good
that
job.
Word today.
Good job. You did great. You used it perfectly.
I said it as if I already knew it.
It was great. Keep going.
Okay. So.
I'm proud of you. Good job.
I It's because that only works because I understand that I'm broken and I need saving and I need the thing, the external thing.
Wait, how does that fit with everybody working together? That doesn't make sense.
Because I alone can't do it.
Well, no one person can do all things. That doesn't mean you're broken.
That's what I want to rail against.
Wait, what?
I want to rail that I am incapable by myself. I want to be capable by myself.
Okay, tell me how you can do all things to all people.
I'm not...
I'll fulfill all needs everywhere.
I don't want to do that. I want to fulfill Rob's needs.
Okay, so we're back to selfishness.
Yes.
So tell me your philosophy on selfishness.
All right, I'm getting there.
Okay. I'm waiting impatiently. Status quo impatiently for me.
What I'm saying is because the Orthodox teaching of Christianity has told me that I've been broken before in the womb. God knew me. God plucked me out of the ether, stuck me in a womb, and while I was in the womb, I was damned to hell. Mm-hmm. And I didn't ask to be pulled out of the ether and stuck in a womb and damned to hell.
Okay, so which...
I'm getting there. Let me finish. Mm-hmm. So as I get... ejected into the world.
It's called born.
Born into the world.
Birthed.
I now must... Now there's an external requirement pressed upon me. Uh-huh. I must look at myself as broken and accept the charity of the work of Jesus on the cross. Now I'm getting real weird here, and I apologize because I don't mean to take it this way, but I'm doing it for... I'm being real with you, okay?
Okay.
So as that... penal substitution. Why are you laughing? Because I said penal.
Penal substitution.
As we look at the penal substitution theology, mm-hmm. It requires that a savior must be there. It's this. Now it's two forces. You know, I was born broken and unable to do it on my own, metaphysically, philosophically, spiritually. And because of it, I need this system, i.e. religion, needs to come in and do its thing, and then I now become part of the religion.
How does that tie in with having a purpose?
Because having a job to do in the machinery of religion is a requirement of the religion so that it can move on and have its power structure.
Now we're getting somewhere. So you think that having a calling or a purpose is doing some sort of job within an institution, a religious institution.
So I started this podcast by saying, hearing from God what you should be doing and doing it.
But that's very different than doing something inside of a religious institution.
Well, so that's why this is a muddy, disgusting topic, but one that's really well needed.
Okay, but is that what you're saying?
I'm trying to say more than that.
Okay, but
I'm not choosing selfish. Like, we're told, don't be selfish, share your toys, share your food. Yes, I mean, do all that. But I want to get to a place where I feel like I'm enough. Mm. Where I feel, no, I was actually born into the world and into existence wonderful and beautiful, and I don't need anything. I am self-sufficient. Because I was made wonderfully by God or whatever. Instead of being born broken and then needing an external thing where we are all, you know, part of a larger system that at the end of the day is really just a greed machine that is being leveraged by, you know, power hungry folks, because a lot of institutions have that issue, you know?
Sure.
So that's why it's so muddied, and that's why there's so much baggage when I hear things like a purpose-driven life, or those, you know, fireproof, those unrealistic views of the world of a calling are and can be destructive. They are and can be destructive. Now, I have a personal story here.
Okay.
That informs it. I was successful in business, self-sufficient.
Owning your own business.
Yes.
Okay, I knew you then.
Yes.
Okay, I remember.
Yep, I became dissatisfied.
Okay.
And I felt the pull, the inkling, the call to do ministry full time. Mm-hmm. I remember sitting at my client's desk, you know, doing work for them, thinking, I should be working for the church. I should be working for the church. And it was pressed upon me. Then I'd get into other meetings, and then we would go do things, you know, I'd fly across the country to workshops about how to do online ministry, because I was involved in the online ministry, and house church ministry, because I was involved in house church ministry, and this is how you do this, this is how you do that. Well, we're going to hire you. We need somebody to lead us in this way. Oh my gosh, that sounds like purpose and things I need to do. And that thought began to worm into me to where I thought that was my calling. Mm-hmm. And so I gave up a successful business.
I remember, to my dismay.
And
no, I did support you. I supported you.
I know you did. You did. And
I was just a little bit dismayed.
Yeah, well, we soon became a lot dismayed.
Yeah,
because that was not a clean transfer of the calling. You know,
right. God, they offered you a job and then rescinded it.
We do dumb things like, oh, if this is really God's calling, it's going to be difficult. And then I'll speak for myself. I'll say, oh, this requires faith.
I'm being tested to
see if I'm called. I'll keep going because I'm called, even though red flags are flying high and I should go, whoa, stop.
See, that's where the calling or the purpose-driven life concept lead you into a place where you don't have good boundaries for yourself. You're seeing the red flags and ignoring them.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Which is why, and I know that a lot of my viewpoint here is personally biased because of my experience, but I don't want to be bit by another calling. I don't want to be called.
I would love, I mean,
I want the
finish
uncalled.
Your statement, finish your thoughts,
okay.
But I would love to offer an alternate perspective on the concept of calling.
Okay, I'm not going to listen well.
I know, but tell me when you're ready.
All right. I do think we have other things to talk about regarding this. But
well, you've been talking a long time. Are you going to hear my perspective at all?
Yeah, I guess.
Or is this a monologue? Because I can go hell dive.
Yeah. I want to hell dive too. No. Okay, that's good. You can say what you want to say. I'm going to stubbornly listen.
Don't be so disappointed. What else do you have to say on the topic?
No, I have lots of things to say.
Okay, go ahead.
But no, it's good. You need to say your piece. Say it.
I believe.
But really, what I'm trying to...
You little shit. Oh my God, I knew you were going to do that. Oh my gosh. If I was closer, I'd pinch you.
Okay, go ahead. I'm just kidding.
You're going to do it again.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
Yeah, you are.
No, I'm not. I'm good. I'll behave.
Okay. Imagine, like, use your imagination.
Mm-hmm.
To imagine before you were born. I'm glad you're closing your eyes. Keep your eyes closed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, imagine before you're born, you have essence, and you are a spirit, and you are whole, and you are yourself, and you are one with God in His presence, and He is smiling and...
God's a He?
She.
Okay.
They.
Them.
Them's is smiling.
Them's is going to have some breakfasties.
Them's is smiling.
Okay.
And them's is happy about your existence. And them's have all sorts of ideas and dreams about what all that you could accomplish or experience or become or invest in others or yourself. All these opportunities laid out before you, like infinite multiverse opportunities, okay? You're not closing your eyes. Close your eyes and imagine.
Okay.
Imagine the tesseract
of
infinite possibilities for your life.
Mm-hmm.
And in that moment, there's no lacking. There's no brokenness. It's only opportunity. Okay?
Okay.
And for me, all of those opportunities are callings. It's where there's a word.
Oh my gosh.
There's two words. There's a word called kairos, and it was explained to me by my old pastor that it is when God and you are in perfect alignment. Chronos is this way, is horizon yeah. way, like
mm-hmm. chronological.
Chronological, mm-hmm. correct. And kairos is this way, mm-hmm. and it's up and down, mm-hmm. and you're in perfect alignment. Okay. And all of these opportunities are before you, and anything that you may do is good. And when God says he was pleased and his creation was good, I think that's what it's talking about. And the purpose that you may find in this life, the calling that you may find in this life, is when you are in the zone, if you will, of any number of those opportunities. I'll also go on to say, one of the problems with the book Purpose-Driven Life, or the concept that's been commercialized, is that a lot of times people will believe that they have one calling for their entire life. And that's not very realistic. We go through many different stages. Relationships have stages. Mm-hmm. Life has stages. You have different jobs. You live in different places, maybe. You and I especially, traveling a lot when we were young. Different friends, different relationships. And it's unrealistic to think that you would have the same calling or the same purpose throughout it all. Mm-hmm. But I think that in the fact that we are uniquely designed, meaning no two individuals are the same, even twins mm-hmm. or triplets or what have you, we're uniquely designed as individuals. There's something special about what we can contribute. So it's not about being broken and needing everyone else for you to be whole. It's about sharing the uniqueness and the beauty that you were given with others, and not having the shroud of shame that makes you hide from who you really are. And it doesn't matter what that who you really are is. I truly believe that there's a beauty in that. And when you're in alignment with that, you are in alignment with God. Just being yourself, authenticity.
Yeah.
And one more thing. Your calling can change throughout your life. It can augment a little bit depending on situations or who you're around or your job. And it can radically change. Mm-hmm. And I think people get stuck because they're trying to fulfill a calling that they heard when they were 20 and now they're 40 and their life doesn't look the same, and they're trying to force it and force it and force it, and it's not fulfilling anymore.
I agree. And I think everything you said.
Did you like that exercise?
Yeah, it was really good. It was very good.
And that's my perspective on calling.
The only thing that I think I have an issue with is that word. I mean, that's just not what a calling means to me. So you outlined this wonderful vision of the multitude of possibilities.
Right.
A calling is one.
No, I don't think that's true. I think that's a misunderstanding.
I agree that that is a poor, I like your way.
You're talking about an infinite God.
Yeah, I like your perspective more than what I think the world wants me to think mine is. But right, I like your perspective.
That's post-industrialism, where you do one trade, you do one job, you learn one skill, and you produce yeah. for society.
And they don't want you to feel so shitty about it.
Right, so they call it something calling.
Yeah,
right.
So it's the thing that you are meant to do.
Oh, it's a calling.
It's a calling. And I think that, I mean, so, yeah, what's funny is we started out like, what's it mean? And then we went esoteric and deep real fast. And we have not even talked about the real world pragmatism of words, a calling, and the implications on it really well. You know, we went off. I'm sorry I did that because I was triggered. You know, Rick Warren triggered me.
I heard it.
So
trigger warning.
Trigger warning. Rick Warren.
It's okay that you have some personal trauma associated with that.
Well, I do. I'm here to say that.
I can hear it.
I do.
It's okay, though.
I do. And some of my I want to be selfish rhetoric is really just to try to create that boundary so that I'm not manipulated by
absolutely
a calling that right is fake or not real.
Right.
Or
to reclaim some agency.
Yeah.
In your life.
That's a really good way of saying it.
Yeah.
Because we can be manipulated, and by we, I mean people that are easily pulled into this cult-like mentality. Mm-hmm. I'm part of this machine. That's not the right way to say it. I'm part of this a vibrant, ecstatic ministry / community, and I'm doing great, awesome things, and I just can't be me in it. I actually have to be fulfilling a greater need.
Right.
So there is the, we would hear it in a megachurch. Are you called to be a volunteer for children's ministry? It's a high calling, you know. Or are you called to do this? And you can put in any labor need, any free volunteer labor need you need. And then we right calling. Right. Everybody's got a calling, you know, to fill those.
I actually went to Children's Pastors Conference a couple times. Mm-hmm. I heard a speaker, forgive me, I don't remember their name. Anyways, I heard a speaker who talked about that begging for volunteers actually does the opposite of what you want to grow your ministry. When you beg for volunteers, it actually brings you people who don't want to volunteer but are ruled by guilt.
Mm.
And they actually make the worst kind of volunteers, and it destroys your ministry. What you want to do is you want to have people who are already interested in that, not just, they have a really big need. They've begged
called
every week. Yeah, sure, called.
I'm just messing with you.
I was going to say gifted.
Oh, gifted.
Sure.
Okay.
Skilled, desire.
Mm.
I do think that there's something to saying, what do I really enjoy doing? How can I share that with others? Because I tell you what, Robert, there is nothing better than seeing someone that's passionate about what they're doing, sharing it with someone else. That's a beautiful thing.
Oh, that is beautiful. That is beautiful.
That's a beautiful thing. Now, where it gets sticky and ugly is when you're leveraging that for free labor.
Yeah. It's terrible, actually.
It shouldn't be that way.
Yeah. Can I talk about Star Trek?
Sure.
So I grew up watching Star Trek The Next Generation, and Jean-Luc Picard was my surrogate father, mm-hmm, and taught me many things in life. One of the things that show brought me or alerted me to was this notion of a realized utopia. It was this place where no one was poor, no one was sick, disease and, you know, all those needs have been made complete.
Fulfilled.
Everyone was fulfilled. And your definition made me think of that, where everybody had an opportunity to be whatever they wanted to be and to present to the world with their giftings, because they didn't need to do a piece of labor. They were able to do art. Oh, one day they may want to learn how to play the flute, or another day they are going to become a seamstress, you know?
Well, you know, in my exercise, I talked about this was you with God before you were born. And the reason that I laid it out that way is because there is very much, in the real world, opposition. And as you grow, there are many people, there's so many people whose opportunities collapse even just by being born. Like, it's not so much...
So think, oh my gosh,
that
makes
broken,
me want to cry immediately.
But that the world is already like this when they get here. There's already classism, racism, oppression. There's so many, you know, there's poverty. There's people who don't have all of the opportunities that they should have in a perfect world, in the ideal utopia.
Now your thought exercise makes me sad.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we're covering all the emotions.
I'm now sad.
We were happy and now we're sad.
I'm sad because I went along with your thought exercise.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, that's great. I have every opportunity afforded to me.
But not everybody does.
But not everybody does.
In fact, nobody has every opportunity.
That's true. That's true.
There
all
are
that did
roadblocks
all that did now I'm that much more I'm selfish.
Okay. We're right back to it's okay. You can be selfish. It's okay. I have a servant's heart, and I realize that you have...
A taker's heart.
No, I actually think you have a pastor's heart, but it's different than a servant's heart. Mm. And I feel fulfilled when I serve others. And for me, it's very difficult, or I've struggled in the past. It's not so difficult now. Setting boundaries on how much I let others take from me. And you've been a beautiful example of how to say no.
How to be selfish.
Not selfish. Self-preserving.
That's what I'm saying. Love yourself.
And it does matter. And loving yourself.
You matter.
Yeah. And I completely agree with what you're saying, that if you don't have self-love, you then cannot love others well.
Yeah. That's all I'm trying to say, like a hyper pendulum swing version of that.
Sure.
We are so hell-bent on being told that we must empty ourselves 110%.
Well, from almost every
religion. And now I just
want
to go the other way. I just want to be like... I just want to preserve myself.
There's something good about that. But understand, I'm talking about, you're not born broken. You're born with all these opportunities. And the world is what breaks us.
I've heard you say that a couple times in this podcast, during different episodes when we're recording this podcast.
Yeah.
And I honestly need to do more thinking on it than that perspective, because I... quickly eject it.
What do you hear me saying?
If I'm being honest, what I hear is, it's hard for me to hear what you're saying and not attach the theology I'm trying to get rid of.
Okay.
So you'll say that phrase, you know, we're not born broken, we're born into a broken world.
I did not say that. The world breaks us is what I said.
Okay, yeah, that's it. Sorry. What I'm hearing is...
A broken world.
Not only just a broken world, but I mean like... It's hard for me to hear those words and not associate penal substitution theology with it. What is it with penile? Penal. P-E-N-A-L. Penal.
A middle schooler. I don't know. I hope you cut that out.
Penis. Vagina.
Penis is not as funny as penal.
Penal.
I don't know.
Penile.
It's a weird word. Anyway. Okay. So... interesting you say that, because I do think that there's a minute difference that makes a huge difference, and that is when Christian religious organizations talk about a broken world, it is a us versus them mentality, okay? What I'm talking about is more like we're born good, and as we go along, we're collectors of hurt, and if people don't properly deal with that.
Sounds like a shitty hobby.
Nobody wants to be a collector of hurt. We're also a collector of joy
also
and memories.
Also sounds like a great band name.
Collector of hurt. We're also a collector of many things, but for this instance, a collector of hurt. And if people don't properly deal with that, what they end up doing with that hurt is hurting others. And so that's how the world, not as its own entity, but as the people who are in it, end up breaking the new ones who come. So I believe that children, when they are born, are innocent. I don't believe that they're at fault. And I believe that they get hardened by the things that they experience and the other people that are being porcupines around them. What I'm saying is, I believe that people are born good. I truly believe that. And that as they journey throughout life, they get hurt. And sometimes that changes people for the worse.
I can't not think about how that then equates to sin that they need to be saved from. And if they don't then accept Jesus, they can't be saved from it. Like, that is a theology that's been pummeled into me that I want to get rid of. Not even because I think it's necessarily wrong or right. It has nothing to do with that. I want to be free from the bias of what you're... because I think what you're saying has some value, but I am looking... my own bias is distorting what you're saying. It's really hard for me to hear what you're saying and take it at face value because of the things that I've just been subject to. It's really difficult.
This is the result of that thought process for me. In a practical, like pragmatic application. when I am confronted with someone in relationship or in thought exercise that other people deem unworthy as humans of fill in the blank, XYZ, unworthy of love, unworthy of mercy, unworthy of, you know, respect, whatever the fill in the blank is. When I encounter someone that other people deem unworthy, I am then able to see them pre-hurt as just a child who didn't choose to be born. Just a child who's here.
Oh, I don't know why that's so hard for me, that sentence.
Like, they're just here, and they, I don't know what has happened in this person's life. They could have had a plethora of things that they went through that got them to where they are, that now this other person is saying they don't have the same value as a human being. And for me, it helps me to see people's value despite their actions or production or lack of production.
Let me tell you what I'm thinking as you say these things. And okay. I'm sorry, but I hear Jacob and Esau in Romans, and it breaks my heart. And it says God had a plan for Jacob and loved him, but Esau he hated. And so it was in the womb. Because it literally says, I should pull it out and quote it, but I'm too lazy to do so. While they were in the womb, Jacob was loved and had a purpose and blah, blah, blah. But Esau, fuck him. Hate him.
Okay, so let's talk about this. How do they know? Who wrote that? How do they know that happened?
Well, it was author Romans.
Who wrote it? Paul?
Best we could tell.
Okay, so here's the thing with Paul's writings.
Wait. Yeah, Paul.
A lot of Paul's writings, in my humble opinion...
Bullshit. Meow, 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 meow.
Right. No, that's not what I was going to say. A lot of Paul's writings were for the purpose of behavior modification and community control, if you will.
I mean, that's, yeah, sure. So, I'm not surprised you said that.
The point is, there are different kinds of expressions in the Bible, and not all of them are instructional for living, right? There's some that are metaphorical. There's some that's like poetry. There's some that's historical. There's some...
Wait, you're saying this is your view?
Yes.
Okay.
Why? Are you saying I'm wrong?
Huh?
Are you saying I'm wrong?
I mean, I don't hold that same view. I'm not saying you're wrong. I want to know if that's your perspective.
Yes. That there are different types of writings in the Bible.
I agree with that. Yeah, yeah.
And that Paul writing about what happened to Jacob in the womb, I don't know what the timeline is, but I'm pretty sure... That happened way before Paul was alive.
He was. Yeah. I mean, he's just recanting the...
A fable.
The fables.
Okay, correct. So let me tell you, from somebody who loves fables and lore, the purpose of fables and lore is for moral refining, okay? And they're often exaggerated or made more monstrous than real life.
Right. Totally agree.
To teach a lesson. Mm-hmm. To have a moral, to make people think, oh, you know, hey, this could go really bad.
Yeah, I right now as I sit in front of you, 100% agree with what you're saying. The last 30 years, 35 years of me being told about Jesus-y things was saying, oh, that word, Paul writing is writing, that's God's word. That's God saying a thing. No, it's not a fable. It's not a lesson to be learned. It's actual word for word true.
Well, if that was actually what people believed, I mean, men would carry around stools and not put their butt where a female ever sat.
I mean, they did for a while.
But they don't now. That's what I'm saying. If we're going to pick and choose.
I agree.
Let's choose that as a metaphoric fable.
Right.
That teaches that not everybody has the same lot in life. And I say that only because that is also a story that's repeated multiple times in the Bible. Not everybody has the same lot in life. Mm-hmm. And we should have compassion for those who don't have the same opportunities that we have.
Totally agree. I totally agree. And a lot of what I'm saying now, and if I've not been so clear or obvious in previous episode recordings, I do not now have a literal view of the Bible in terms of that is not God's literal word. I think it is not inerrant, meaning it has errors. And it is to can it be divine? I think there might be some divinely inspired writings in there, for sure. And there are some very important things to learn, for sure. But there's also large parts of it that are just, and this is maybe melodramatic, piles of trash that should be thrown out and not read because they don't have value. In as much as you could read anything and find value.
Well, here's the thing. I read a lot of fantasy novels, especially when I'm not in school. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that this is a made-up world, but there is real, I can derive something real from it about people, mm-hmm. learning about people, relationships, scenarios. You can learn so much from fantasy and, you know, never live in that world.
Right. And I agree with that you can learn from things.
Right.
You can learn from anything.
Yeah.
And I agree. The thing that makes it difficult is that there are groups of people that tell you, oh, no, you're not learning the right thing. This is what it really means. This is how it should be interpreted. This is real. This is from God. What is your calling? I need to work on Saturday. You know, it goes
That sounds so trite. We didn't put it that way.
I need you. God Almighty from the beginning of time has said that you need to work in children's ministry, and we really need you on this, you know, Sunday night service. Can you come in?
But here's the difference. I believe in magic. I believe in magic in this world. I know you're singing the song.
Trying
aren't
to
you?
Not sing the song. Trying not to sing the song.
I sing it every time, but it's okay. We can love the song too. Mm-hmm. I believe that there is real magic in this world, and that it's accessible to everyone. Sometimes if you don't try, but most times when you do try. And it looks like different things, but when somebody reduces a calling to volunteering on Saturday night, if it's not magical, I don't think it's a calling.
Mm. Do you believe in calling? Do you believe in being called? Is that words you would use?
I would use those words, but I don't. The original definition that you gave was something from God for you to do.
Now remember, my original definition, if you can remember an hour ago, was quite literally, this is what I would have said 5 years ago, and I can't answer it now because it's all blown to shit.
I do understand that. Okay. But I actually still believe that something from God is that plethora tesseract of opportunities.
I mean, do you believe that everything is from God in that sense?
Yeah.
So everything is a calling?
No.
Anything's a calling?
No.
Everything's special?
I believe that everyone is special.
Anything special?
Not anything.
Some things are, some things aren't.
Right. So I happen to operate very much off of intuition. And so I have an internal meter that tells me, hey, this is magical.
Yeah. See, that's interesting. Oh, gosh, we cannot dive. We're over an hour already.
We're going to cut out a bunch of us arguing in the beginning.
No, I'm not going to leave all of that.
Please don't. Nobody wants to hear that. Jeez.
You're saying something very important to this conversation because you are driven by an intuition, a gut that you believe.
I believe more than I believe anyone else in the world, I believe my gut.
You're selfish.
Yeah,
you're selfish.
Sure.
That is what I'm saying. I don't
have
that.
I believe that is from God for me to use.
I mean, I appreciate that.
It is the technical definition of what you said.
But I don't have that.
Yes,
or
I do.
I don't have it at the level you have it.
Have the intuition. You have a different thing.
No. I don't have the pure belief in my own gut that says, don't listen to that. Mark Driscoll's a fucking idiot.
Right, but you have a belief in something else.
But what I'm saying is, that thing that kept me safe from that was gone because I had put my faith in that other thing, Saint Ignatius, Augustine.
Wait. Are you talking about, isn't Saint Ignatius one of Jack Black's characters?
Jack Black?
The School of Rock Band? Yeah.
Saint Ignatius? No, I don't know.
Oh, anyways, okay. You can cut that.
Oh, you mean the Mexican... I don't know what it was. Maybe it was. That'd be funny if I pulled it out of my... Nacho Libre.
But I thought his real name was Ignatius something.
It may be Ignatius in his movie. I don't know. I'm not even sure.
It's funny.
I was just trying to name old church fathers.
Oh, okay.
My belief faith in those old church fathers. And mm-hmm. instead of me having that gut internal that I trust to say, no, you know, deflect and move in the world, I have been beaten up to say, this is the thing, this, that I've been told, you can't even trust your own mind. Your mind is full of sin. You can't think a good thought. Okay. Your heart is wicked in everything it does.
I have two things to say about that.
And so consequently, I have to go, where is the standard in which...
Sure, your ground has turned to quicksand.
Correct. What do I stand on? Oh, the Jesus rock. Here's the old church father. Do what they say.
No.
In 30 years of my life, I have thought, if I know this person's thought and teaching, that's what I should do. And all I've done is put people in that group or out of that group. And then that's the group that follows me. And what I'm saying is that's what's led me to say to myself, I've not been trustworthy to myself. That's why I want to be selfish.
I have two things to say about this. Number one, the reason that I have intuition is because of deep
I know.
Trauma.
I know. You make me sad.
Listen, I'm not trying to make you sad. I'm being real with you.
I know. I'm sorry.
You, now that you've been through some things, you probably have more intuition than you realize.
No, I know I do.
And the second thing is where I am very much an intuitive person just by nature, you are very much a thought-provoking person. And I hope, my hope for you is that you can come to a place where you can joyfully explore and trust your own thoughts again. And that you can engage in a way that is full of excitement and wonder, and not have that burden of people telling you your thoughts are wrong. Because I think where I trust on my intuitions, your thought processes are, I mean, you're a gifted teacher and you're really skilled in that area. And I understand the recoil, if you will, from hurt. But I do hope that you can get back to a place where your thoughts are your own and you can trust in that. And that maybe you can hold opposing thoughts at the same time. Imagine that.
Get out of town.
Multiple thoughts about different things. You don't have to choose black or white, one or the other. You can have a little bit of gray in there.
You showed me that I'm an idealist. I have a hard time.
I know.
Existing in the gray.
But you can have ideals and still understand realism.
Yes. I didn't mean ideals like, oh, people should do this or not. But I mean like there's the perfect version of a thing. Mm-hmm. And unless it's that perfect version, it's not that thing.
You just need to take statistics. And then you'll understand the chances of that perfect thing actually happening.
No, I don't want to do that.
It's very, very low. 0.001.
Nope. That's a very good thought.
You'll get there.
Thanks for saying that.
I see you progressing in that way. And I know that you tend to take time and stop before you process your feelings. And I know that it's been some time since we left, you know, the mega church, and that just now you're processing some of these things.
Oh my gosh, there's so much to process.
But you will get to a place where your mind is once again wondrous, and you can read different things and not be boxed in by old dead men who you didn't even know, or aka fathers, forefathers, whatever you call them.
Church fathers.
Foreskins.
These people didn't have foreskins.
I know, they got cut off.
No, would they? Some would.
Some of them. Some of them got cut off.
That's what I'm saying. Snip, snip.
My goodness.
There's a lot of penis references in this episode.
You're going to have to cut them out. When I do my when I do my
edit, you should probably do the first notes, pass. You need to do the first pass.
I don't know how to do the edit program, but
No. I'm saying just listen to it and tell me what you want me to cut out.
I will certainly have a lot of notes for this one. But in all joking aside, I think it's important that we look at what our preconceived notions and what we've learned these concepts mean, and that we, if they feel triggering or uncomfortable, that we reassess with a new perspective what they could mean. That's that recontextualization.
Mm-hmm.
Because we don't want to stay in a place where a single word, like calling, pulls you out of the stability that you've been building. What else do you have to say?
Please like and subscribe. Leave a rating. We're up to 6 5-point
stars. 6 views.
6 5-stars. It's awesome. Hit the review. Put the little thing in there and say, we're so funny and thought-provoking.
That's hilarious, because we literally talk about how we don't care if anyone listens to this ever. We just do it to have these conversations.
I know. I'm just being silly. I don't have a good way to conclude this. What you said is very good. Now, because here's what happens. We have these conversations, and then immediately I recede into process land, which is inside.
Oh, I know. I can see it happening.
And bye. Then, goodbye. See you later.
See you tomorrow.
I got things to work out in my brain.
Now I got to think about things. It's been good thinking out loud with you. With all that said, remember, opportunities are not lost yet as long as you have breath.
Mm.
That's my ending thought.
That's a good one.
All right.
Thanks for listening.
Take care.
Next time.
Bye.
Bye-bye.